Yes, very good. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T. Yes, hello, welcome to the latest episode of P, Q, R, S, T. I am your host, Will Nestle, and I'm talking like this for several reasons, one of which is that I'm extremely tired. I think I'm tired now with my wife about to give birth. Wait until we see how tired I am here in a month when apparently we will have had no sleep at all. But I am nonetheless tired. For some reason, could not sleep very well last night and have not had a lot of good nights of sleep lately for whatever reason. And it's a strange thing that happens to me. For some reason, when I get especially tired, I not only talk, but even think in this accent. I'm not sure why. For some reason, the Sir Ian McKellen version of myself is easier. It apparently uses less battery power than just talking normally. I admit it's strange. I'm not entirely sure why this happens, but it nonetheless happens. I can always tell when I'm getting especially tired when I start thinking like I'm talking to you. And so I figured I might as well subject you to what I have to live with, because why not? That's what podcasts are all about. You get to learn what the inside of my head is like. There's a second reason, one that's a bit more philanthropic. For the best of my knowledge, the only regular listener I have is my lovely and, as I said, currently pregnant wife. And for some reason, it works on a lot of women, and she is definitely one that falls into this category. Guys, if you're out there, I don't have a lot of game when it comes to wooing women. I'm fairly clueless, but I do know that if you can learn how to talk like this, you are definitely doing yourself a favor. And it's not just this. My Spanish accent definitely works for her. So you could watch some Antonio Banderas movies, even Shrek. Just listen to Puss in Boots and learn how to talk like him. Or there's always Ewan McGregor. This one, more than anyone, the Irish accent, for some reason, it just really works in terms of, or shall we say, getting a woman's attention and maybe getting her, well, getting her motor running a bit, if I can say it gracefully. So that's the love tip I have for all you fine gents out there. Learn how to talk like this, and you'll definitely be doing yourself and the women you care about a favor. And when I say the women, I probably should keep it to just one at a time. That's another tip for you. More than one. Why am I even talking about it? I'm going to go back to being Sir Ian McKellen. But there's an extra, even a third reason for talking like this, and that shall become obvious in a bit. But I'm going to attempt to pick up into my normal accent, because I don't know that I can sustain this throughout the entire podcast. Here we go. Harumph! Alright, so, hey, normal me. Hi, out there that are listening. We're well into December. I hope you've finished your Christmas shopping. I know you haven't, but get on that, would you? So that when I need to go to the store on Christmas Eve, there's not a whole lot of people there. It'd be great if you could get stuff done early. Let's see, today I wanted to get back to something I started talking about ages ago. It might have been episode 4, or even earlier, like 1 or 2. It was before special guest Tamara Hayden, it was before Emily Coates, before my wife's episode, so it's before number 5. I was talking about how I got into comedy at all, starting with the earliest memories I had of having fun with humor and laughing and learning that I could be funny. And I had gotten up to the point, I think, of junior high, maybe high school, where it was a defense mechanism. I used humor to keep people at arm's length. And there's a long story in God kind of getting my attention and saying, hey, you know what? Let's have a better life. You can do better than this, and I want better for you. And that all happened around the time I was 22. But from, I don't know, 13, 14, up to 22, and even some years beyond that, there wasn't, so for about 10 years, it wasn't a lot of growth in terms of my humor. I got a little better at you know, finding the jokes, and I certainly got a lot better at being sarcastic, but it was such a defense mechanism. It was really, I will tell jokes so that you don't have to know that I'm scared. I'll tell jokes so that you kind of, you know, to just keep you at a distance. I want you to like me, but I don't want you to really see me, because there's nothing there that you would like. So, you know, let me tell jokes. Let me try to be the life of the party without, you know, drawing too much attention to myself. I just want to make people laugh, because then maybe they'll like me. And that was kind of the basic idea. I think if I'd had to pin it down, I just wanted people to like me, and I could make them laugh. And so that's what I did, not thinking that sometimes, you know, the jokes were... If a joke was against somebody in the room, even if everybody else laughed, it was still not a blessing. Certainly, of course, not a blessing to the person being made fun of, but not really a blessing to the rest of the room, because the rest of the room's like, subconsciously or otherwise, they might be like, okay, when's my turn? So I try to make fun of... I poke fun of myself with my comedy. I laugh at myself, you know, maybe laugh at life. I don't try to go after specific people. So if you're in the audience and I'm doing comedy, unless you start heckling me, you're pretty safe. You know, you're welcome to laugh at me. I will laugh at me, or maybe society at large. But, you know, I don't go after people anymore. And I really try to watch... for example, if I saw somebody in a strange place, you know, if I was at the grocery store or the library, and I see somebody that I know from church or whatever, my standard response, and you know, my dad used to say this, I think I picked it up from him, boy, they'll let anybody in here. And it's just a joke. It's like, you know, it's a, hey, I didn't expect to see you here, and, you know, boy, this place has such low standards. It is just a joke, and it's not meant to be insulting. However, I've hurt people with that. Some people, and saying that somebody can't take a joke, that doesn't really suffice. There are some people that, I mean, people have different senses of humor, and some people are more easily offended than others. But if someone's more easily offended, I'd like to respect that and take it easier on them. And I think if a person kind of pays attention to the world around them, they can get a sense of where people are at in general, and where they're at maybe on a specific day. But I don't know, I try to default to saying things that are uplifting, and I do have friends where we riff on each other and give each other a hard time, and I can really enjoy that, and I enjoy getting it back from them. And that's also kind of a litmus test for me, is, you know, when I say something to someone else, if the situation reversed and they said that to me, would I be hurt by it? Then I'm not going to say it. Or I shouldn't say it. I don't know how I got into that. But anyway, my humor, as I started finally gaining a sense of self, my humor started to evolve. And it became less a do this and people will like you, and more of a, wow, this is fun. And it was in 2008, so that would be the year I turned 30. A lot of change that year. Absolutely a great deal of change. And one of the most fantastic things that happened was meeting Jenna Wilcox. Name drop, boom, meeting Jenna Wilcox. Because up to that point, I used to love watching the show Whose Line Is It Anyway? And my friend Jonathan he introduced me to the Impulse Theater, which was in the basement of the Wincoop for ages, and hopefully they were looking for a new space. I hope they found it. I don't know if they did or not, so their advertising isn't quite up to what it was, but assuming they found a new space, go see the Impulse Theater. Fantastic improv. Bovine Metropolis has some great shows too, but I didn't know about Bovine Metropolis back then. Johnny would take me to the Impulse Theater. I'd watch Whose Line Is It Anyway? And I would leave off watching the show, or I would walk away from the theater and think, I wish I could do that. I've heard other people talk about this, but I don't think a lot of people do. Would leave Impulse Theater and think, okay, if I'd been on stage in that situation with that setup, what jokes would I have told? What would I have said? You know, I'd go to sleep thinking about it. And I never really said, God, can I do improv somehow? But nonetheless, he loves me, and he was aware of how much I wanted to somehow, someday, do improv. There were opportunities in high school that I missed out on partly because I was too shy to jump in, and afraid I might do it wrong. A lot of my life pre-2008 was the first 30 years, a lot of it was characterized by, if I don't know that I can do this well, I'm hesitant to try, because deeply afraid of failure. But that's one of the reasons why improv has been such a blessing. Anyway, I missed opportunities in high school, partly because of fear of failure, and also partly because some of the opportunities came along while I was working on the senior video. And so I filmed fellow classmates doing improv, and still thought about, oh, what would I have done, but never got up there and did it. Fast forward to 2008, and again, a chance meeting with Jenna Wilcox, because my lovely and talented sister, Amanda, was in a dance company. And it's a long story in and of itself. One of my clients, Lena Line, now Lena Murphy Trin, had a dance company, the Murphy Repertory Company, and I was very privileged to film for them. And then my sister, who grew up doing ballet and had been part of Mountain Dance, she joined up and took some hip-hop classes with Murphy Repertory. And just for fun, one semester, we took a hip-hop class together. And yeah, there is video in existence of me on stage doing hip-hop, and no, you don't get to see it. Just trust me when I say that I'm better at comedy than I am at dancing. And this was not intentionally supposed to be comedic, although, hey, if the audience got a laugh out of me doing hip-hop, then they got a laugh. But anyway, my sister and her friend, Jenny Dahl, who's now Jenny Dahl Harbert, and then Jenna Wilcox, who was Jennifer's friend, they all ended up going to lunch after this show, and I was invited along. And so it was just, I say all that to say that it was just random chance, or if you believe the way I do, divine intervention, that I happened to be at a table with Jenna Wilcox. And it just so happened that she mentioned that morning she had been teaching improv with the youth at her church. And I said, oh, wow, improv, I so wish I could get into that. She said, well, we have a group Monday nights, why don't you come? And that was a life-changing moment. That was to realize, A, I don't know how I'd missed it, but I'd missed it, to realize that there were opportunities for some random schmo like me. That's my superhero name, Random Schmo. To do improv was fantastic, and to stumble on one of those opportunities, unlooked for, God is good, and he was very good that day, as he is in all days. So I found out about this group, and I don't know how many Mondays it might have taken. Maybe I showed up next Monday, maybe I had to talk myself into going, but I did show up, eventually, if not immediately, and I got to meet Doug Johnson and Brian Rollins might have been there, and Danny McIntosh, who, if you have never seen Danny McIntosh play a female role, you have missed out on a very important part of life. It is just something magnificently wonderful. And that first night down in the basement of St. Luke's United Methodist, I remember we played Unlikely Superheroes, and I was tagged with being Peanut Butter Jelly Man. No, sorry. It was Smells Like Peanut Butter Man. Now I remember. I was Smells Like Peanut Butter Man, and I found my way off stage chasing after Smells Like Jelly Girl. Very, very creative, I know. And anyway, that was every Monday night, and I got to meet Megan Johnson, who's now Megan Walker, and Brian Treseis was part of the group for a while. Jeff Cohn, once I met him, and he found out that I was doing improv, he started coming to the group. He invited Tiffany Durr, who is now Tiffany Nestle, to come to the group, and I will be forever grateful that the group existed and that he invited her to show up, because that was one of the ways that Tiffany and I got to know each other better. But from 2008 through well into 2013, so for 5 years, I got to be part of the St. Luke's Improv Performers, a slipper, and it was great fun, and we did a couple shows. We were averaging one or two shows a year at the church. The group... I got us an opportunity to perform on television, since I was working for TV 41 in that time, some of that time. So we got to go do our thing on TV and make a DVD to send out to people to try to take our slip show on the road, which never happened, but it was nonetheless such a blast, and such a fantastic time in my life. Really looked forward to those Monday nights so much, and I miss it. So any slippers that are out there, if anybody gets the bug that they want to start the group up again, let me know when you're meeting, because I would show up. But one of the things, improv, if you are one of the vast majority of people that has no command of the English language, if you are one of the vast majority of people who has little to no improv experience besides maybe seeing Whose Line, a lot of it is coming up with stuff off the top of your head. Yes, but that's not as much of it as I thought before I got into it. Because I am pretty fast, and I can come up with things quickly. But to play a game like, say, Questions Only, and think in my head, what's the next question I'm going to ask, and not be listening to the other person on stage asking their question, I'm not doing good improv. Yeah, I can be really fast, and yeah, I can probably get a laugh, but I'm not listening. And that is one of several major, major points of improv, is listening to the other people who are on stage, and as well as the audience suggestions. Being available to what's going on is huge for improv. Another one, which if you've even stuck a toe into the world of improv, you've heard this, is yes and. Put quotes around those two words, yes, comma, and. And what it means is whatever you offer, if you're, you know, my partner in this improv game, whatever you offer, that is what's going on. So if our suggestion is, you know, we're in a coffee shop, which 95% of the locations are, and that, I'm going to take a quick side note. If you are part of an improv audience and they're looking for suggestions, be encouraged. Come up with interesting ideas. Please, listen, coffee shop, doctor's office, Starbucks, yeah, that would be a coffee shop. You know, there are about five locations that 95% of the time people shout out. So when somebody says, say, Batcave or Space Station or, you know, preschool room, we get schoolroom a lot. How about preschool? How about senior citizens home? There are so many ideas out there. Think outside the box. Come up with something good, and trust me, the scenes that we give back to you will be better for it. Anyway, yes and is, so like I say we're in a coffee shop, and my partner says, oh my gosh, is that an elephant? Yes and is, it is. I think it's a parade. Or, it is. The elephant is trying to tell us something. Whatever, it's agreeing, yes indeed that is an elephant, and then taking it further. No, but would be, hey, is that an elephant? No, your eyes are failing. Now that is a suggestion. I've hit the ball back to the other person, but what are they supposed to do with that? And that's a fairly good version of no but. I've worked in improv with some folks. I was in a scene once. I was like, hey, I've been caught up in this tornado. And the person I was opposite was like, no, you haven't. What do you do with that? That's just, wow. And the scene is pretty much over because, I mean, I can try to carry the whole scene myself. No, I really am. Or, oh my gosh, I must be having one of my crazy fits. But say yes and. That's one of the hugest importantest principles of improv. And I bring it up because it turns out it's kind of huge for life itself. It doesn't work in every situation, just like it doesn't work in every improv situation, although it does 99% of the time. I wouldn't say it works more than maybe half the time in life. Somebody comes up to you and says, you know, hey, will you hold this gun for me? Probably you don't want to say yes and. You'd want to ask other questions or maybe walk away. But I lived so much of my life behind the door of no but. You know, so, hey, do you want to go ziplining? No, I might fail at it. Basically, it wasn't even no but. It's no, I might be no good. And so improv, I had already started being yes and-ish about life. When I started doing martial arts in 2000, there were a lot of moments where I was like, I probably can't do this. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to give it my best shot anyway. And to get to the degree, after 7 years, to get to the level that I got to, it doesn't matter where. Those that know me know what that level that is. But it's farther than I really expected I could go. And same thing with improv. Same thing with a lot of things in life where when I was willing to say, yeah, I'll take a swing at that, and start to realize that, you know what, it's okay to fail, my life has gotten a lot better. And so, yes and, it works for a lot of life beyond improv. And anybody out there where it resonates to you when I say I wouldn't try things because I might fail at them, think about yes and next time you get a chance, for what that's worth. So I got to do improv, I got to learn a little bit about, and it's not for the lack of teaching. Jen is a great teacher. I was working with great people, but I still had a lot of learning to do. And for 3 years, I was part of the Slippers. And then, and one of the other things that improv really helped me with is just looking at possibilities in situations. I don't get locked up as easily, again, in life, but especially on stage as much as I might have in the past. Since I was doing this improv thing at St. Luke's, when I heard about stage opportunities, they do shows regularly, I was like, yes, please, or yes, and I jumped in. So I got to do Tied to the Tracks, which was a sort of a Wild West melodrama. And I got to do Dear Edwina, which I had not heard of. You may not have heard of it. It was on Broadway. The story is a girl in her neighborhood, sort of a Harriet the Spy kind of age level, is putting on a show for the kids in her neighborhood, and it's the show consists of teaching things. She likes people learning, and so you get to learn about what the silverware. It's fork, knife, spoon, or fork, knife, plate, and then spoon. Things I didn't actually know. You get to learn what RSVP means, and they're clever songs, fun songs. It was a bit of a strange little show, but it was a fun little show. But I enjoyed being a part of the show and getting to put on a Rastafarian wig and sing. I don't even know what it was about, but it was a parody of Deo. Anyway, there are pictures for that too, and if this was a visual medium, boy, you could feast your eyes. But I get off topic. In the performing of Dear Edwina, the main character, the gal playing Edwina, there was one part of the show that wasn't terribly well written, in that on page, say, 5, Edwina says to the audience, okay, let's blah, 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 and then about 4 or 5 pages later, she says, again, to the audience, okay, let's blah, blah, blah. There were two lines about 5 pages apart that were almost identical by the same character. And one of the performances of Dear Edwina, something right as the main character delivered the first of those two lines, or was supposed to deliver the first of those two lines, something happened with a prop. A prop fell over. Somebody was having trouble with one of the properties. And the main character got a little flustered, and she said the second line, the one that came on page 12. And the problem was that line led to more of the show, as lines tend to, but we couldn't get away with skipping those 5 pages. There was a whole song and character introduction. There were things that had to happen. But she had already said the later line, and so all of a sudden, everybody on stage was like, oh, dear, because all of us knew that was the later line. And there was, for about 2 or 3 very long seconds, we all just kind of stood there. And anybody might have said something to save it. I'm not tooting my own horn that I was the one who did, but I will toot improv's horn. Is that a thing? I'm very tired. I'm going to make it a thing. I will toot improv's horn to say that it was the experience of kind of being out of my head that allowed me to make up a line on the spot, to do improv, and say, oh, hey, weren't we going to blah, 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 something that wasn't the greatest line in the world, and the audience might have thought to themselves, wow, that line was a little clunky. But what it allowed for those of us on stage, it allowed us actors to, oh yeah, jump back those 5 pages. And hopefully the audience, I would say fairly likely the audience, never even knew that we almost came to a complete stop. Because, somebody has to do something in that situation, and to say, okay, audience, we just screwed up, so we're going to start again from the beginning of the scene. You could do that. I've seen plays do that, but you don't want to do that if you don't have to. So again, not to pat myself on the back, any one of us on stage could have come up with that. It was just that I was the one who did, and the audience never knew that we came this close to having a complete on-stage train wreck. So yeah, that was my that's a story of how improv blessed me. And I have so many. It's such a fun thing to do. Listen, if you get a chance, I know that there are classes at the Voodoo Comedy Playhouse. Lord knows there are classes at Bovine Metropolis Theater, which was my next big improv jump. But any chance you get on stage, do improv. If you are listening to this and you're like, I could not imagine ever getting on stage or trying anything like that, that's why classes are so great, because your classmates probably are in the same boat. There's not going to be an audience, very likely. It's just those that are in the class. And it is so much fun. Oh, listen, I can't even think. I have so many. I got to do this on stage. In fact, I do have a really great one. It'll wait till later. But the story of having complete justification to throw a glass of water in somebody's face on stage. And listen, those opportunities don't come around a lot, but I got to, and it was worth it, and it's a great story. Anyway, have been rambling, like usual. Me, again, rambling, but it happens. I'm tired. Been talking about St. Luke's. Well, 3 years into the work that I, the joy of the group at St. Luke's, being a slipper, I was downsized from the TV job. The TV job went away. And I had told myself, knowing that the TV job was soon going to go away, they were, the writing was on that particular wall, I had said to myself, when I get these 30 hours a week back, because by then, by God's graciousness, the business was going pretty well. And so I didn't need to go looking for another job, glory to God. I had said to myself, well, when I get these 30 hours a week back, I want to see if I can audition at Impulse Theater and Bovine Metropolis Theater. And I don't know how I first found out that Bovine, maybe somebody, it might have been Jonathan, maybe somebody took me to see On the Spot, which is the Bovine Metropolis weekend show, kind of like what Impulse Theater does. But I said, I'm going to try and see if I could audition, having no expectations of making it on to, you know, any team there, but why not? It was a yes and kind of thing. It's like, hey, what do I have to lose? And I got an audition with, it just happened that there was an Impulse Theater audition. The only one I've ever heard tell of. I'm sure they have them occasionally. This is just the one I happen to hear of. Right around the time that I lost the job at the TV station, there was an audition for Impulse and for Bovine. And I auditioned for Impulse and now I have other things going on. Would love to have had that chance again with the knowledge I have now because my quick wit was enough to get me through to the second round. I don't know if 80 or 90 people showed up. I was one of 20 or so that was invited to stay for the second round, and that was great, and I still am proud of myself for that. But then in the second round, it was more of a long form. They said, you don't need to try to be funny, just, we're not going to give you much, just, you know, here, you four, go on stage, you're at a barbecue, take 30 seconds, and then we'll ring a bell and you get started. And that was it. They didn't, and I was so lost. Without the structure of a game, without this is what you can do to make us laugh, I really had no improv skills, and so did not get the call from Impulse Theater to start coming down doing shows with them. With what I know now, with the experience I have now, to go back to that, I would at least have made a better showing of myself. But it was not to be. Anyway, around the same time, there were auditions at Bovine Metropolis, which happen twice a year, I think, at least they used to, for On the Spot. There are auditions maybe four times a year for the house teams, various teams and sketch comedies. There's lots of opportunities down at Bovine. I imagine there probably are also at Voodoo. I just have never looked into Voodoo's schedule. But I auditioned. Doug Johnson, fellow slipper, he also got in on that audition. And both of us were picked for a house team. We did not make it onto On the Spot, which, looking back, was not a huge surprise. We weren't. I shouldn't speak for him. I was definitely not at the level to get that opportunity, but was nonetheless very blessed, and it was a life-changing moment, another one, to be invited onto the house team at Bovine. A lot of people that were in the auditions had gone through all five levels of the classes they teach at Bovine. To date, I've only been through level two. Level three, just couldn't find a time that worked with my schedule, and then my life changed a little bit. There was the whole getting married thing. But they'd been through the five levels of teaching at Bovine, you know, had more specific Bovine instruction and experience. I'm coming in with no formal teaching except what I had learned through working with Jenna and Danny and the others. And I still made it onto a team. And the team that they formed, the whole idea was for it to be a feeder team for On the Spot. The coach, Spencer Rybacki, had been in On the Spot for ages. He had won Denver's Next Improv Star, I think, that year, maybe the year before, which is something else they do at Bovine. More on that in a bit. And so the team was put together, and I just lucked into, it wasn't luck, it was God, but lucked into the audition and got on the team where we're going to let you perform at Bovine, we're going to give you chances to get on stage, and the whole idea is to get you ready to be in On the Spot. And a lot of the people that were on that team went on to being On the Spot. And boy, I wanted to. And I auditioned for On the Spot 4 separate times, never did make it. But I have no regrets. It would have been fun to try to do that. Now I can't imagine being out that late on Fridays and Saturdays, but my life, my priorities have changed. But what I got to do with the team that when I was on was such, it was so much fun and such a treat. I learned so much. The chances to perform on stage at Bovine Metropolis Theater were huge. I haven't mentioned the team name because even the story of the team name is a fun one, at least for me. We're trying to come up with a team name, and you know, what do you do? There's 9, 10, maybe there's a dozen creative people in the room. We all might have ideas. It could take hours. Spencer did something I feel was pretty clever. He gave us all a slip of paper, said, write down one word, put it in this bag, and I'm going to pick out words and keep picking out words until we have our team name. And he only had to pick out two. And for the sake of the sake of what? Wow, my brain just locked up. Just for historical remembrance. Oh, I hate when I can't think of words. And it's happening right now. Hang on 1 second. So I sighed and I thought about it. And then I remembered the way I wanted to say it. For the record, the word I put in to the basket was Batman. And I still stand behind that as an excellent part of an improv team name. However, the first word Spencer pulled out of the bucket was platypus. And the second word he pulled out was surprise. And unanimously, we all agreed he did not need to pull anything out of the basket because we had our name. And so I was very, very honored to be a part of Platypus Surprise for about 2 years, I think it was. There was a Wednesday night show at the time, Laughing Dragon Cake Samurai Fun Show. I have a poster on my wall. I'm looking at it right now, but it's in the other room, and so I can't quite make out the words, but it was something like that. And it was hosted by the ever-hilarious Kent Wellborn. And also a shout-out to Denise Mays and Eric Ferrone, who the husband and wife team that run Bovine Metropolis Theater. You guys gave me a chance to do comedy, and I also got the opportunity to run Lights and Sound for some shows down there. It was a valuable experience. I really enjoyed the time I had at Bovine. So if either of you ever bother to listen to this, thank you. You gave me quite a bit, and I'm very grateful. So that was Bovine Metropolis Theater, and I was still taking part in slip performances and slip practices, and I was also on a team at Bovine, and there was not a lot of dating at that time, which was good. I was still in the trying to find somebody desperately. There was still a lot of work going on in me, and so it was nice to have improv as something to do to take my mind off the whole searching for a wife thing for 2 seconds, and that's a story for another podcast. But while I never did get On the Spot, I did actually make it onto Denver's Next Improv Star. And all this time, I'm learning more about improv. I'm learning more about, just deeper stuff. It's like, I don't know, like elementary school, that I had learned my ABCs. I'd learned how to read and write. And now, the math was getting a little harder. I was learning about sentence structure, if you will. And so I got to the threshold of long-form improv. And that's what Denver's Next Improv Star is. It's a show that has been put on around the turn of the year. It's like January through April every year since I don't know when. I think we're hitting the 6th or 7th season here in about a month. They're going to start that up. I recently had an email looking for people to audition. And the first time I auditioned, I did not make it. And that was in 2010. And then the next time was 2011. And I did make it. And No, I'm mistaken. It was 2012 into 13. Does it matter? It doesn't. Anyway, first time I did not make it. The second time I did. And it was quite an experience. As I look back, I'm not sure why I made it. Maybe because the judges, those that were choosing people for the show, thought that I might be able to rise to the occasion. It honestly might have been, and this is no slur on Bovine at all, believe me, it might have been this guy's going to be voted out fairly quickly, but he'll be interesting. And, you know, I'm sure that when, you know, they're picking people for reality shows on TV or reality-type shows at theaters, like this one, that sometimes people are picked just because they'll make an interesting exit. And I may have been one of those. The way Denver's Next Improv Star works is, as I say, it's like reality television, just in a theater. At the start, there's 14, perhaps, participants, and every night one gets voted off. And they throw twists in, like two of the judges one week actually ended up turning out to be surprise participants. They weren't even in the official promotional materials for the show. You know, they weren't in the photo session, so it could be a surprise. The winner from the previous year came back to be a judge. They try to switch things up. And boy, it was an interesting experience. I am better at long form than I was when I was at Impulse Theater auditions and they said, okay, you're at a barbecue, go. But it's still not my comfort zone. Even though I've gotten a lot better at short form in listening to other people and being more about building the scene than myself looking good, I'm far more comfortable where it's a short game, there's some rules, I can get some laughs. That's what I enjoy doing. The Whose Line Is It Anyway version. Long form can be fantastic, and I have so much respect for people that do long form at all, and huge respect for people that do long form well, and I just filmed the Denver Improv Festival, got to see a lot of long form, and some of it was better than others, but what was really great was fantastic. And to see, you know, someone might have no suggestion at all, or somebody says banana, and they take and they do, you know, two or five or a dozen people, whatever, do 20 minutes that circles around and comes to an end. I can't even describe it. Google long-form improv, maybe. If you ask Emily Coates real nicely, she can get you links to the Denver Improv Festival videos that were filmed. But it is a fascinating, fascinating experience. It's unlike anything else on stage because it has elements of this is something we spent hours scripting, except that they didn't. If you get performers that have been working together for a long time, you can feel it. They trust each other. They can take a scene, let it go where it'll go, and tell very interesting, sometimes hilarious, very compelling. It's just fantastic. And I'm not very good at it. And so, as a result, the first 4 weeks, I think it was the first four, might have been three, might have been five, I'm going to say 4 weeks of Denver's Next Improv Star that year, I was in the bottom three. I somehow managed not to be voted out 4 straight weeks in a row. And the first week, I think the only reason I wasn't voted out was because the guy that was voted out had, for whatever reason, he had decided to smash into a couple of the fake boxes that were on stage, knocked them towards, he came really close to hitting an audience member with a box. And they were like, we really need to let you go. it was a poor choice on his part. But that first week, one of the things that's not a good idea in improv, although now that I know about it, I see it happening a lot. Teaching scenes are bad. That's not unknown. It's not always bad. But as a rule, if somebody comes out and they start an improv scene and they're like, okay, so here's what we're going to do, and they're teaching, placing yourself in a position of authority over the other person, it just cuts off all of the possibilities that aren't that. So the other person, if they're going to yes and, has to say, okay, so this is how this is going. A scene has to go somewhere, but it's one thing to take a step with the suggestion of banana or coffee shop or whatever, and then let the other person take a step, and you're both moving together. And then there's teaching scenes where I take a huge step and say, okay, this is my role, this is your role, this is how we are, let's go. And it's an indicator of, I think, being uncomfortable with the whole idea, a desire to take control of the scene. And why would I need to take control of a scene? Well, if I'm not sure where it's going to go. And that first Denver's Next Improv Star night, I did 2 different teaching scenes. And I wasn't even aware that I did that sort of thing or that it was an issue until it was pointed out to me. I struggle with it to this day, although I do very little improv anymore. I would like to. I enjoy doing it. If anyone, you know, out there has a just a weekly sort of get-together for improv. Please let me know. I would show up at least occasionally. But, so anyway, the Denver's Next Improv Star experience was a challenging one. And again, four straight weeks I was this close to being voted off. And then I won the fifth week. By the way, in addition to one person being voted off every week, one person would win a prize every week. Whoever was the top participant in that particular week would win whatever the prize was of that. They would win that week's prize, and they would also be safe from elimination the following week. And week five, after 4 weeks of being bottom three, week five, I took it all. And I said, about 40 minutes ago, that the fact that I was doing an accent would come into play later. Well, week five, the theme, every week had sort of a theme, the theme of week five was accents. And this is one of my favorite improv stories, and it's I tell it on myself, which I try to do, and this is a good one on me. When I heard that we were doing accents, I was so excited because I do so many accents. You've already heard one of my several English accents. You heard Spanish, you heard Irish. I also do Russian and German and French, although my French accent isn't great, and Chinese and Japanese and Chicano, and I have a bunch of different accents. And so when I heard that's what we were going to do, I was like, yes, fantastic, this is totally in my wheelhouse. And they break the night into two different parts, and for the first part we were going to do a scene and we were going to maintain an accent through the scene. Well, they went to the audience for the accents. They got suggestions for the audience of the accents that we were supposed to do, and when we got to me, the audience member said Cajun. And I was like, son of a gun. Because while I can do 12, maybe 15 accents, I have no idea what a Cajun accent sounds like. Or didn't. I could not come up with... Because I'll hear a voice in my head. Like I say, when I talk like this, I'm channeling Sir Ian McKellen. When I talk like this, it's more Ewan McGregor. And when I talk like this, I'm thinking of Antonio Banderas. Well, my Cajun slot has nothing in it. I could not bring to mind the old X-Men cartoon with Remy LeBeau, Gambit. He's Cajun, but couldn't think of what he sounded like. I had never seen, and I would have done this if I had ever seen it, Adam Sandler's Cajun Man on Saturday Night Live, who just talks about depression and frustration. I would have just done that, would have ended every sentence with a word that ended with T-I-O-N, and that might have gone okay. So they said Cajun, and I was like, oh, crap. And the scene started, and I talk like this, man. I brought out my Jamaican accent because that was as close to Cajun as I could come, and even now it's turning into a Chicano accent, which it probably did that night as well. It was dreadful. And I don't think I got any points for that particular part of the show. However, for the second half of the show, we were allowed to pick our own gosh darn accents, and the challenge was to maintain your own accent while doing everything you could to make the others break. So, and that was fun. Even if I had lost and been kicked off the show, it still would have been a fun experience, but I went for my British accent because that's the one that I can hold on to in the face of whatever may come. And I got to do a scene with Greg Kuntz, shout out, not a shout out, I don't like saying that, name drop, boom, Greg Kuntz, I don't know that it was an accent so much as a character of this hyped up physical trainer who talked like this, and at one point Greg was, I'm putting my hand up next to my face, you can see that, right, it was right here, in my face, going, protein, and the scene was, I don't know, he was cheating, or my wife was cheating on me with him or something. There was a divorce involved. And I was talking. He was violating my boundaries. I set the line right here, and he's in my face, and I'm doing it. And I did come fairly close to breaking. And it's a source of pride with me that I don't break, especially when the whole point of the scene is to not break. And I didn't. And I don't know how much of an edge I had over the other two that were in the top three, but I do know that I was the one who won that night, who won the two tickets for the Avenue Theater, I think, season tickets to the Avenue Theater, and it was a good night. It really was. Some of my friends were there to see it. Those that weren't there to see it have heard about it, and that was fun. And that's one of the great things about improv. Most of the time, it's fun, even in situations where you're doing improv that is outside your comfort zone. My experience at Denver's Next Improv Star was kind of the end. It was the beginning of the end for me doing improv regularly. I was no longer... Platypus Surprise had been dissolved. I had, for the fourth time, failed to get on the spot, and that was the last time I auditioned for On the Spot. Kind of gave up trying after that. And since then, I think it was 2012. No, I think it was early 13, so 2 years now. In the past 3 years, I was a part of Out of the Basement Improv. Shout out to those guys. And we got to do two shows together. And it was fun. The group seems to have dissolved. I don't know. Nobody sent me a, hey, we're dissolving email, but nobody invites me to practices anymore. Not for about 2 years now, so I think we're done. But I was also, 3 of the past 4 years, I got to do the Smile Train Improv Show. And that was a huge gift. Emily Coates, I met her through that. I am totally blanking on the name of... Hang on one second. That's right, Steve Lucas. Name drop. Boom, Steve Lucas, I believe, coordinates the Smile Train Improv here in Denver. I'm not sure how... what his level of involvement is, but he was the one, somehow he got my name, I got invited. We performed at the Avenue 1 year, and then there was a smaller theater off Santa Fe that we got to do it the subsequent 2 years. And that is a fantastic organization. Smile Train, they take the money that the shows generate, and it goes towards fixing cleft palates in third world countries. Pretty simple, and it's fantastic. You know, giving kids a smile. We give the audiences a smile. The audiences, you know, donate money, and the kids get smiles. It's smiles all around, and I'm all for that. And being part of the Smile Train Improv Show, the first time, as I said earlier, I got the chance, a legitimate chance to throw water in someone's face. And again, if you've never done it, you have no idea how incredibly satisfying it is. So it's not something that you get to do just because you want to. There has to be a reason. And boy, there was a reason. Hang on one second. I'm back. The cat needed something. Anyway, I was the particular scene I got to be part of was Helping Hands. If you've ever seen Whose Line Is It Anyway, like more than 2 or 3 episodes, you've seen this scene. There is a person who is the one that gets to talk and kind of run the scene. However, they cannot use their own hands. Someone else stands right behind them. It's a very intimate moment, but listen, improv lends itself to intimacy because you don't know what's going to happen in a scene, and with yes and being what it is, a lot can happen. But you stand right behind, and I mean, you know, right there behind a person, you put your arms under their armpits, and you are their hands. So if they need to gesture at a bird out the window, it's your hand that's doing the gesturing. If they need to, you know, fire a gun at somebody. And that's another general improv rule. You don't take weapons on stage, fake or real. Again, it just limits your choices. You know, you shoot somebody and they're dead. How do they take part in the rest of the scene? It's not impossible, but it really limits the choices. It's one of the things that the bovine classes learned me. But this particular version of Helping Hands, it was a talk show. So there were 4 of us on stage, the 2 people in the talk show, and then the 2 of us that were doing their hands. And I think they were sitting and I was kneeling behind my performer. Maybe we were doing it, you know, it was a standing talk show. I don't remember, but it was definitely a talk show. Because they had really gone all out for the staging for the Smile Train show. Instead of us pretending to have, you know, water to drink, or there was an actual little table. There were chairs. There was, a phone. There were maybe flowers. There was definitely a glass of water apiece, like you would have on talk show. People want to drink water. So I'm not sure where I got the idea. It might have been the moment I saw the staging, but at some point during the scene, as, you know, I'm being the hands for this performer, I whispered in her ear, get in an argument with her, as it was a female. Get in an argument with the other, you know, your talk show host. And she yes-anded me, and she got a little belligerent, and she got into an argument, and then it got to the point where it made sense to, and I grabbed the cup of water, and I tossed it right in the host's face. And not only, as I say, is it supremely satisfying in a way I had no idea before I did it, but the audience got a huge kick out of it. If I had just done it to do it, that would have been one thing. But since it made sense in terms of where the scene had gone, audience thought it was, they just loved it. It killed with them. And the funny denouement there is that the host tried to get me back and have her hands partner throw water in my face, and I ducked and it missed. But anyway, that's just one story of like a thousand about how much fun improv can be. And it was improv that led me to do stand-up. And as I've already gone well into 40 minutes just talking about improv, we will leave how I actually got into stand-up for next week. And so, yeah, that's about it for the podcast. I'm tired, and I think that'll be sufficient for this week. As parody songs go, all right, today it's cheesy, and it's going to be short. This is not much of a parody song. But it is Christmas time, and so I have a Christmas rap for you. No, don't change the channel. Or podcasts don't even have channels, so where are you going to go? A Christmas rap for you. It'll be short. It might possibly be sweet. And let me see what I can come up with. Deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa la 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 la, 'tis the season to be jolly, fa la 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 la, don we now our gay apparel, fa la 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 la, troll the ancient Utah carols, fa la 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 la, what, fa la 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 la, word. Yeah, it wasn't great when I did it back at the Stand Up and Deliver show that I'll tell you about next week, but it's Christmas time, and it's a Christmas parody of sorts, and it's what I had. I will say, though, that if you'll come back next week, forgive me for that less than stellar performance, come back next week, I actually have something very special that I've been working on and practicing to give you next week at the end of next week's podcast. And then the week after that, which will be Christmas week, God willing, I have a fantastically special guest. I'm not going to tell you who. You'll recognize the name. I'm very, very excited that I could get him on the show. This is truly a coup for PQRST, and you'll want to hear that episode for sure. But in the meantime, go out and do some holiday shopping. I'm not going to say do something random for somebody else, that random acts of kindness and all that. It is the season for that, but all through the year should be the season for that. So I'm sure you already do that. And I'm not going to ask you to do more than what you already do, because you know what? You're doing pretty good already. Own the stage you're on, and I'm going to go get some sleep. So long.